Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
West Ham are top of the league, but all eyes are on Liverpool against Chelsea this weekend. So much to tuck into as ever on another huge episode of the Gagapod, so let's get started. Yes, hi everyone, and we're back for another big edition of the Gagapod. Match week two is done, fresh off West Ham beating Leicester 4-1 on Tuesday morning. We'll discuss that off the top of the show. They are top of the league on 6 points, two wins, level with Chelsea, Liverpool, Brighton, Tottenham, but ahead on goal difference. But you sense there is a big four emerging. And to discuss that, we have our Gagapod big three to do so. Thomas Sorensen, Mark Schwarzer, and Michael Bridges. Great to see you all splattered across the world today. Four different locations for us to discuss all the talking points from the world of football. Bridgie, do you first? Good morning. Good to see you. How are you doing?
Absolutely fantastic, Dave. It's still tough being in lockdown, but I'll tell you what, all the Premier League action over the weekend has just been magnificent to watch, and it's kept me going, Dave. And yet again, the Gagapod, meeting the boys, Schwartzy and Tommy again, and discuss all the action. I cannot wait.
Beautiful. Schwartzy, how are you travelling? No Premier League outings on the weekend for you?
No, not at all, mate. I'm actually abroad, so I'm out in Spain, enjoying the high life. Watching from afar, and Bridgie just completely lied through his nose there because he was talking before him when on the camera. He was like, let's just get this over with. I can't stand you guys.
I would never say that, big man. I'm feeling a little bit fragile. I've had my second vaccine and I'm feeling a little bit down. I've got aches and pains all over, Dave, but football will get me through it.
That is the cure.
You look disheveled. Let's be honest. You do.
Lucky it's a podcast. Lucky for the four of us, it's a podcast, to be honest, at the hour that we're recording here for all four of us. But football's got us through the last 18 months, hasn't it, Tommy? And what have you enjoyed over the weekend?
You know, I think, obviously it's a special day at Anfield, the game there, some cracking goals, some great individual performances. So, the Premier League just keeps delivering. After just hearing Schwartz's plans of playing golf and enjoying the sunshine and, get a bit of red wine and some beautiful cheese and stuff, he's put me right back in the basement. But, I'm just glad that we've got the Premier League to talk about this morning.
I'm not going to lie. I agree with you, Tom. The Anfield crowd gave me chills on Saturday night. Watching all of that gives me chills. But from our side of the world, it is pretty weird to watch, I got to say, but it is amazing and takes you to another planet, which we're going to do over the next 40 minutes or 50 minutes or so, take you to another planet just with the jibber we're going to talk about, but also by taking you to the Premier League football world. West Ham this morning, Bridgie 4, Leicester 1, Pablo Fornals with the opening goal, Youri Tielemans with a brought it back to 2-1 after for Leicester as well, but Mikel Antonio with a double laid on to become West Ham's greatest ever scorer, going past Paulo Di Canio as well. Although this game, and jump on the UpToSport app and the socials for the highlights of all the goals and as well of this incident I'm about to talk about, swung big time on an Ayoze Perez red card as well.
Yeah, what an incredible match. I've got to say, West Ham are one of the teams I thought might fall by the wayside this season. But the first couple of matches, and especially this game, I thought they were magnificent, even before the Perez red card, Dave, because tactically, Moyes got it spot on. He had Antonio and Fornals absolutely doing a great job without the ball defensively on Tielemans and Ndidi, and he'd let the two centre-halves have the ball, Amartey and Soyuncu. And what he did, he just stopped, he nullified everything in that middle of the park. And when West Ham won the ball, the counter-attack play was absolutely brilliant. Bowen, Benrahma yet again getting a goal. And I just thought they looked absolutely brilliant. And when Leicester went to 10 men, it was absolutely game over. I know Tillyman's got a goal back, but West Ham dominated superbly. And the goals from Antonio, what a player, like you say, to go and break Di Canio's record. Sensational. However, the celebration is absolutely tragic. He ran over, picked up a cardboard cutout of himself, gave it a kiss, showed it to the fans, and then threw it on the floor in disgust. So I don't know what all that was about. He was excited. The emotions took over, but it's just a great moment for a great goal scorer. And he's looking the real deal this season if he can stay fit.
He kissed himself, didn't he?
He kissed himself. He did. It's almost like he was looking in the mirror and kissed himself. It was actually awkward to watch, but funny in the same sense.
Have you guys ever seen a celebration like that? Or did anyone? When you were involved in a celebration where your teammates gone and done something? Have you been stuck in, like, particularly you two keepers, where you would have maybe tried to join in and been halfway, and be like, "Oh my god, I'm stranded here. I don't want to join in on this. What the hell's going on?"
I've only actually joined in once, I think, and that was when we played Australia. We were playing Uzbekistan in the semi-finals of the Asian Cup 2011. I think it was probably like sixth or seventh goal we scored, and I think I'm trying to think who was the goal scorer. He scored his first goal for Australia, and I ran down to celebrate with him. That was it. I was knackered after that.
Was it Matt Mackay?
I think it was Matt Mackay. I think you're right. I think it was Matt Mackay's first ever goal for the Socceroos.
And Tommy?
Yeah, not individually, but, you know, just sometimes the ideas the striker have, you know, the things they go up to. I think of Balotelli when he got the mobile phone out and started taking pictures. And, you know, I don't know what happened this morning with Antonio, but, there's something behind it. I'm sure the story will come out. Definitely looked a bit weird.
There's another really good one. Massimo Maccheroni played for Brisbane Roar, played with him at Middlesbrough. He was back in Italy, scored a goal. And I think it was either in Serie B, I'm not really sure. It might have been even in Serie A. He scored a goal, ran behind the goal and took a beer off someone and took a sip.
No, that's a man that knows what he's doing.
Yeah, if you get a premeditated celebration, do something like that.
Dave, the only other one that I remember that was crazy was, I think it was a guy called Cat Spy of Newcastle United, when he took his boot off and started smashing the hoardings. You remember that one for Newcastle United? He started kicking the holders, took his boot off, threw it in the crowd, and then I realised he had to play for the rest of the 20 minutes without his boot and had to get it back off the fans.
Very good, very good. Back to the actual football though, Tom. And the thing about West Ham as well is once they went 1-0 up, and I know you've spoken a bit about David Moyes on this show, and you know that he has his plan, he has his way. And when they went to 1-0 up, you could see a switch go, and you just knew they're going to be hard to beat from that point, notwithstanding the fact that they'd been playing well up until that moment they took the lead.
Yeah, you know, again, I think hats off to David Moyes, because, going back to last year, I wasn't too convinced. And they seem to have a bit of a thing with Leicester. They did them last season a couple of times, and, I must say, with that midfield with Sušek, Declan Rice, it's just an anchor that gives those forward players, Antonio Fornals, even the wing backs or the full backs, to go forward, supply the service for the people in the box, and they don't necessarily. I think in the first half they were well down in possession. Leicester had control of the game, but they're happy to do that and know that they can, in transition, with the physicality as well, they can create chances. And you know, 8 goals in 2 games now. You know, you got to take the hats off.
But Tommy, that's what I was saying about that possession. Moyes allowed them to have the possession. It was just Soyuncu playing it back to Amati, and they were dropping in and just stopping the midfielder. So it was possession without a purpose where they had the stats on. West Ham were controlling them and sending them into areas that they didn't want to go and forcing the passes centrally so they could win the ball. And it worked superbly. And I look at West Ham next 2 fixtures. They've got Crystal Palace. Can they win that? Yes, they can, because I haven't been impressed. And then they've got Southampton before they play Manchester United. That will be the tester for them, obviously. And I can see them having maximum points after 4 games.
Which was it? They picked up where they left off from last year. I mean, it was people wondering whether they could back it up. The test will come when the Europa League fixture backlog starts. But who was to say that they couldn't pick up where they were last year?
I think so, yeah. Listen, I think there's always going to be a question mark when you've had such a great season that West Ham have had. What's the second season going to be like? And obviously they've answered some of the questions so far. I mean, listen, we're only two games in, but it's been impressive. And I think what West Ham did really well today was they kind of did what Leicester used to do to teams. Happy enough to sit down, sit back, give them possession, and then, you know, they're well organised. The moment they won the ball, that transition was incredibly quick. I still find Leicester struggle a little bit when they do have a lot of possession. They're not as productive as they probably should be with the quality of players they have on their side. It's a Leicester side that's in that transitional period in terms of the way the style of football they're playing, and they're a little bit hit and miss at times.
The red card, Bridgie. Kasper Schmeichel was leading a protest. They're all pretty incensed, but it looked pretty cut and dry to me.
Yeah. I mean, Oliver let the actual play go on. He didn't even give a free kick for that decision. The play was allowed to go on. And it wasn't until the players kicked the ball out of play that the VAR went and had a look at it. And he got called over to the VAR. And you can blatantly see that, you know, Perez has been done with a little push from behind. He's stumbled and he's completely missed the ball. And when you see it from a certain angle, it's a leg-breaking challenge. And there was a couple of moments to give you one from the referee's angle. You can see that there has been a bit of contact, but he's allowed it to go on, which, we've seen a lot of good decisions, I think, at the start of this Premier League where referees have allowed challenges to go on. We saw Manchester United and Solskjaer was complaining about one when Southampton got a goal. I've enjoyed the referees, but this was a fantastic moment where they've gone, used the VAR, and yes, it was a leg-breaking challenge because Fornells was very, very lucky. And I thought the right call was made when you have a look at the footage.
And as you say, West Ham were on top before that. There was a goal that brought life back into the game, but West Ham went on, kicked on through Antonio to go get the 4-1 win. Go top of the table on goal difference. Good start to the season for them. But as you said, towards the early days, of course. Looking at the weekend that was, early days, indeed, but that hasn't stopped the hysteria over Arsenal, who went down 2-0 to Chelsea in the marquee fixture of the weekend. I think the difference is we've spoken, and I think I've started every discussion with Arsenal on this show recently, being I feel like we've been saying this for months and months and months, but I sense, Schwartzy, that it escalated a little bit over the weekend just in the manner of the defeat, the lack of seeing the progress that Mikel Arteta has made. And whilst he does have the caveats of recruits arriving late, COVID-19 impacts very much, I sense that there's a lot of dissenting voices from Arsenal legends now, which is adding to the mix that's putting him under big pressure with a tough fixture list to come.
Yeah, it is. And you're right. There is a sense of quite a few ex-players now coming out and being very vocal of the way that Arsenal have been playing. But you know what? I don't think it's any new. I think it's been something that's been happening for a number of seasons now. Arsenal haven't changed whatsoever. Personnel have changed a bit. But in terms of the way they've played, the lack of leadership, the lack of identity, that's a bit of an issue. I think with Mikel Arteta now, they've actually gone away from when he first took over that ball playing sort of team, taking a Pep Guardiola kind of style, and they seem to be in a position now where they're really struggling for any sort of identity. I also question recruitment 100% in terms of defensively being one of their biggest issues, and they still haven't recruited well in that department. I also question the amount of money they've spent on a goalkeeper that, you know, Ramsdale's gone down twice. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe that's the going rate. I don't know what you think, Thomas.
I think Leno has been up and down. We saw that, you know, a fantastic save at the weekend, but we always also seen him struggle at times. And Ramsdale, but I don't think that's the big issue. I think you touched on a lot of things. You know, it starts from the top with the ownership and obviously all the questions and talk about sale and then all the way down, you know, through management to the players. I think there's a lot of issues to start on because they've got a long way ahead. I think the game showed that tactically. I think they were, you know, definitely outdone by a million miles by Chelsea, who are the total opposite. They've got a strategy. They've got a way of playing, and Arsenal haven't. And you know, I understand why people, you know, Keogh and Ian Wright and people like that come out and criticize, because they see their big team that had the glory days now looking so far from it.
By the way, and you mentioned the goalkeeper, and that's an individual issue, spending too much on the goalkeeper. But it's also, I probably think, Bridgie, they've spent more money than anyone in the summer. And of course, he's going to need time to bed that in. But they've spent more money than anyone. Do you feel like they've actually solved any issues?
Looking at them in the first few matches, no, not at all. And it's disappointing, because I was a big fan of Arteta when he first came in, because he had a lot of things to deal with. And I do think he changed that culture to a degree. But the performances and the way the players have been playing on the field have been so lackluster. And they've run out of ideas. Now, against Chelsea, they're at home, they're playing Chelsea. Chelsea, 22 attempts. And they bullied them all over the park. And you know, I'm watching the game and I'm seeing Chelsea dominate. The back four of Arsenal was getting torn apart. Tierney was having to come right inside, very narrow, because the two centre-halves had got sucked into Mark and Lukaku. And then when you see somebody else drift, I think it was Havertz drifting into that area, Tierney's had to follow him. So Reece James was all alone on the right-hand side, and it was happening time and time again. On the opposite side, Alonso was doing it. And I'm thinking, right, I'm no manager in the Premier League and I'm no coach up there, but I could see there was a massive fundamental flaw in the way Arsenal's tactics were set up. I couldn't believe that he tried to change the personnel, but it was the actual tactics in this game that had let him down. And that is him, as Arteta and his coaching staff, to recognise that and do something about it and change it. And they didn't have I don't think they had the courage to do it, and or they didn't have the nous to see it. Now, you've got to go with the courage one, because these are professional coaches at the top of their game. And I just thought Chelsea dominated, and Tuchel must have been laughing, thinking, how have they not changed anything here?
Well, on that then, what you said, Bridget, Schwartzy, Arteta after the game is still calling for patience. You know, there might be the caveat again that he didn't have his best players there, so we can't judge them on that. That's sort of their spin on it. But ultimately, the question is, they've picked him on that long-term plan. Can you see, and it's only two games in, but this is the same evidence of what we've seen after an off-season, off last season, the crowd's already booing, worst start in 118 years. Do you actually see this thing that we're holding on for? The promise, the blue sky and the horizon that's going to come if we're all patient?
I can't see it at the moment. I haven't seen it for a while, to be perfectly honest with you. I think there's been probably the last 6 months where Mikel Arteta has really struggled, I think. I think he struggled with the pressure. I think he struggled with trying to give his team identity. It's a massive job, let's be honest. It's a huge job. Arsenal have been this side that for a number of years now, I mean, let's be honest, under Arsene Wenger, fans were not happy finishing in the top four for 20-odd years in a row. Let alone now, they're nowhere near that and they're unhappy. So Arsenal fans have been unhappy for a long, long time. So you've got to be very careful what they wish for. And there's a prime example of what's happened to Arsenal. The other issue is, obviously, you know, when they made a change, whoever's going to follow Arsene Wenger is going to be up against it. Unai Emery, I don't think, was given enough time. You see what he's done since he's left. With Villarreal, how well he's done. Then you look at Mikel Arteta, and now they've backed him. They've gone out of the transfer market and they've actually backed him. So to actually then get rid of him now, what sort of message is that sending? What is it saying to people? Right, we're going to back him, but then two games in, they're going to panic and sack him. I don't think they'll sack him. I think he's still got probably another 4 or 5 months at least to get things right. And if it doesn't start to turn around, I mean, obviously barring a disaster, barring they go on a run of losing whatever, 7, 8, 9, 10 games in a row, I still think he's got good enough players to do it, but he definitely needs those key players back. He needs Aubameyang firing, he needs a Lacazette firing, but I don't think all is right there either.
I think all you've got to do is look at the squads at the weekend, Arsenal against Chelsea. The starting 11 of Chelsea far outdid, obviously, Arsenal's starting 11. But I look at the bench and I'll look at the Chelsea. Kepa, Thiago Silva, Kante, Werner, Zouma, Hudson-Odoi, Chilwell and Ziyech. The bench would get in. Arsenal start. they would get an Arsenal starting team. So Chelsea should have won that game, no doubt about it. I look at them. So I don't know where the fans think they're at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Because they cannot compete with that squad depth of Chelsea. They can't compete with your Manchester City. And they're certainly nowhere near the quality of Liverpool when they've got their 15 players fit. So the reality is they're not good enough.
Yeah, but Bridget, I think you need to cut him. Yeah, I agree they're a million miles away. But you need to cut them a little bit of slack that they've have a fair few injuries, some illness. Odegaard has come in with, he wasn't there because of visa. You know, Gabriel, Ben White at the back weren't playing. So, you know, I think Arteta came out and said, I need some time. I need my players back. So we need to give him a little bit of time and slack with that. But I think tactically, I think what Swartz said and what you said as well, Bridget, I think there's some worrying signs there that even with the team he had out, he should do better. They should be better prepared to play Chelsea and know what Chelsea's strengths are, and they got exploited.
Well, the only good news for them really is they've got Manchester City next week, so it's a good sign ahead.
Jrotti, did you expect Romelu Lukaku to hit the ground running the way he did? Looked very impressive, and hearing a lot of talk of final piece of the puzzle, add something we don't have. It certainly looked like that straight away.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you see his interview after the game. One word to describe his performance: dominant. I mean, that's Romelu Lukaku. You know, it's a different guy from when I was there. So obviously he was a lot younger. Hadn't had the experience. Obviously didn't have the success. Since then he's gone on and he's been phenomenal. And I always found that a lot of talk was about Lukaku potentially going back to Chelsea. I thought it was a really interesting one. I just thought, is it a case of Lukaku going, right, unfinished business, I want to go back to Chelsea and I want to show people what I can do, where I'm at? Or would he just write it off altogether and go, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go back to Chelsea. I'm going to stay where I am and into Milan, or I'm going to go elsewhere. And credit to him, he's gone back. And yes, it was a tap-in, but it's the movement. It's the work rate. It's the aggression, the physicality that he showed throughout the game. 100%. He is so vital to Chelsea's grand plans of going on to that next level. And what Bridgie was saying, you know, you look at the squad, it's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal what they've done, how they've been able to build a squad. And this season is incredibly exciting because Man City obviously is a good squad, right? Top class squad. They just miss a number 9. And I think they'll get one before the end of the window. And the most likely one is obviously Bridges' man crush. And then when you look at, you know, Liverpool are hitting the ground running. And you just think this is just a phenomenal season lining up. Manchester United, bit of a hiccup, but they're going to be there or thereabouts. I just don't see them being as consistent enough. It's phenomenal. Lukaku, I would be very, very surprised if he doesn't score 25 plus goals.
Well, Thomas, well, let's pick that theme up. Liverpool versus Chelsea, Lukaku versus Van Dijk. And we're going to get a nice little glimpse as soon as match week 3, aren't we?
Yeah, that's going to be an absolute classic. I'm sure we'll see Klopp, out like he was this weekend about Lukaku not manhandling Van Dijk and being too harsh on him. These are the duels we want to see. And I think the difference between Arsenal and Liverpool is that Van Dijk is happy single-handedly to take on Lukaku, where you could see the whole Arsenal, that first goal. There's about 4 Arsenal players around him, and that leaves the space for Reece James to get in behind. And I think Liverpool will, you know, handle it totally different. So he'll find it hard against Liverpool, I'm sure. And again, we'll have to do a big defensive job as well.
Yeah, I think Tommy, the defensive job for Van Dijk coming back from injury, looking quality, but the guy alongside him, Matip, has been sensational. The duels that he has won, the anticipation where he can get in front of the attackers and nick the ball, and he's going to be having a screen and player, whether it's Henderson or Thiago in front of him as well. I think the Liverpool are a lot more organised, but it's going to be one hell of a battle. Is Lukaku going to play on Van Dijk and have the strength battle? Is he going to go and play on Matip? It's just going to be sensational to watch. And like we said, the two different styles of play again, it's going to be Tuchel's 3-4-3 or whatever he wants to play against the 4-3-3. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But Klopp's got a lot more tactical nous than Arteta, and I think that showed at the weekend where Arsenal got undone.
And by the way, it's two keepers. Let's assume that they're going to go in with the four, which they always do. And I've heard a lot about how what Mari did wrong against Lukaku on the weekend allowed him to bully him. Sort of needed it was too passive. What cues would you be looking for from your defence? And if you were seeing what Mari was doing, would you try almost change it with the instructions you were barking out, or is that too much set up by the tactics that the manager does? Like, what cues are you looking for from your defence when you've got a presence like Lukaku there, and perhaps maybe not a defender who is as independent as Van Dijk, that you know you might need a little bit more cues or coaching from behind them.
You know, I from my perspective, again, you know, if you play with a back four, you know, you got to know what Lukaku is trying to do. You know, he's not, you know, if he's got his back towards goal, that's really where you want him. Like, let him pass it back. You don't need necessarily to win the ball. You just need to be organized. So if somebody pushes in on him, you want the rest of the players to cover. And especially when Chelsea try to outnumber you, I think that was the reason. You know, if, you know, a couple of their holding midfielders as well, you know, you got to get them working with the center halves to cover. You can't get the holding midfielders dragged out of position. I think that happened way too much with Arsenal, Saka and Lukonga. I think you know, they got sucked out and then suddenly Havertz, and that's where they suddenly create a numbers game. And I think as a goalkeeper, that's what you'll be looking for. You got to be looking at numbers, that you always got that man advantage, because otherwise a team like Chelsea will just destroy you.
And that's what you'd be doing, working on training. So in training, that's all going through. If he drops into that pocket, it's either Matip or Van Dijk will go with him, or they both might drop off and allow one of the defensive midfielders to pop on him, like Thomas was saying. So that's all worked on. And then on a match day, as a goalkeeper, it's more about, I suppose, the movement and Lukaku looking to get off people's shoulders. So there'll be times where he drops in. Other times he's just trying to find the gap, isn't he? He's trying to look off someone's shoulders. He's trying to get in behind. And it's constantly just making your centre defenders aware of where he is, what he's up to. And if he just gets out of the line of sight of the defender, you know, you just give him that little bit of instruction. But they're going to have to work. It's like every week, really. But it's more so important when you're playing against the likes of, when Liverpool are playing against the likes of a Chelsea or whatever, with a threat of a Lukaku, you know, you've got to be spot on with your communication, not only as a goalkeeper, but also defenders.
Liverpool were impressive against Burnley, Bridgie. Bigger tests await this weekend, but again, they're back at Anfield. That makes a difference. It made a difference. What have you made of their start to the season as they come into this big game, and how do you see these two lining up?
You know, it was amazing. I was watching that game, and just before kickoff, when they're coming out, Anfield was full once again. This scene was set, and I actually got a little bit homesick. I was thinking, God, I want to get back to England, because seeing the stadiums full, the atmosphere, and it was, you know, I think Burnley...
What do you mean homesick? I thought you were Aussie, and you live in Australia. What do you mean homesick? You're Aussie. What are you talking about?
I know that's what you, but I wanted to return home after seeing all this. It was looked unbelievable, probably because lockdown is affecting us here mentally. But just seeing all the fans out and enjoying themselves and in the atmosphere at Anfield, it's a haunting place. It plays on you. It's got this aura about it. And I think Burnley were defeated from the moment that they stepped out and saw that, because it's Liverpool, the players turned up on the day, the fans turned up on the day, and they didn't let each other down. The players performed, the fans performed. And I just thought all round Liverpool's performance, especially the fullbacks, we always talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold. Robertson hasn't been in, but Tsimikas has come in and he got an assist from the left-back position. And Robertson was sitting on the bench, you know, waiting for his opportunity to get back out there. Jota led the line, I thought, superbly. And, you know, Mane and Salah, yet again, tremendous. But there was a young kid came in. Mm-hmm. There was a boy, Elliot, got his senior debut in the Premier League. And I thought the balance that he gave them, Henderson did the little defensive job. He had Elliot and Keita getting the ball. And I thought the link-up player from Elliot, he wanted the ball all the time. And for a young lad to step out at Anfield in front of all them fans and want the ball as much as he did, because everything didn't go his way. He gave a lot of passes away. in the game, but he didn't go and hide. He wanted the ball again. Now, that shows true character for me. If you make a few mistakes and a few dodgy passes, you still want to get on the ball. And I just thought all around Liverpool, the fans and the players would be absolutely buzzing.
Yeah, he looks good. And so just he's actually the youngest player in the Premier League history. That was his senior starting debut on the weekend. And he's been thrown in the deep end. We spoke about replacing Wijnaldum last week, and you can tell that Klopp is working on those solutions right now. So you mentioned that four, Schwartzy, that's really making this really exciting. And I guess the sense that there is this four that's hard to split is we're seeing a few signs that Liverpool, that it's not last year's Liverpool. It's going to be closer to the one before, and we're seeing a few signs already this season.
Yeah, for sure. And Liverpool need to be the one of two seasons ago, because if not, they'll be left behind again. But there's no doubt they will be there or thereabouts. They'll be in that front pack of four. I've got no doubt. I mean, they're a top quality side if they're all fit, they're all available. And they're going to have a bit more luck, obviously a lot more luck this season in terms of injuries. If they do pick up another couple of big injuries, that's where their squad depth is going to be challenged. And I just don't see them having the same depth as the likes of a Chelsea or a Man City, of course, and even a Manchester United to a degree. So that's the only concern with them. But the way they've started has been brilliant. And like Bridget mentioned there, Anfield being packed makes all the difference for everyone, for all the teams. Home advantage, having their fans back again, nowhere to hide. It's automatically a lift for everyone. There's accountability on that football pitch again.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tell you what, did Manchester United win, Southampton won? They're in that four that we're talking about. But was there shades of our season preview in that one-all draw? In terms of Manchester United, some of the weaknesses there, the midfield and perhaps up front again, Thomas, the moment you sort of take Mason Greenwood and play him out wide again, I know they've got Marcus Rashford and Cavani to come back in, but you just get the sense that they're the type of results that maybe mean that, you know, everyone's going to have ups and downs, but that's where we've had that doubt against Manchester United before the season.
I think so. I think we've seen the fantastic of Man United and the sort of average of Man United for the first 2 weeks. I think I think he hit it spot on. I think Martial, I don't think he's a man for Man United. I don't think he's going to take them to a title. So they need Cavani or Rashford to do a much better job. I think we saw defensively that a little bit of complacency. I know Solskjaer was out and talked about Fernandes being robbed of the ball, but to me it's a perfectly, he dwells on it, he gets pushed off it and they get punished. Nearly got done in the second half. Maguire needs to send a few birthday cards and Christmas cards to De Gea in goal, because he absolutely saved them late in the game, where they could have lost it as well. So I think they've got some issues still, and these are the sort of games that you see Chelsea, you see Manchester City winning. So for United to be a challenge contender, they need to or should have won this game.
Gary Neville was very cheeky overnight, Bridgie, calling said, "Well, Manchester City and Spurs are working things out. Let's go get Harry Kane. Why aren't we signing Harry Kane right now?" Ultimately, do you think Solskjaer will make any changes before the window, or is he playing with what he's got?
Before the window, I don't think they've got the budget, have they, Dave? After getting Sancho in, can they go and get another £100 million player?
I don't think that. I think they can probably look at different arrangements. I don't know if it's Kane, but
no, but there is other things. But what I saw from the previous week, when Greenwood played as the number nine down the middle, he was a lot more threatening. And then obviously Martial came in, Greenwood went back out wide, like you said. I don't think they had the dynamics like they did against Leeds United in the first match, when they looked so dominant.
You forget that one.
going forward. I tried to forget it, didn't I?
It's not his team. It's not his team. What?
Oh, yeah, sorry, you're right. Yeah,
it's Tottenham Hotspur. Remember that, Swartzy. But I just felt that Martial, he had limited touch. I think it was only four touches in the first 20 minutes, 12 in the after 54. That's not good enough as a number nine. They didn't get the supply to him, or he was just hiding. And as soon as they had a little bit of a change around, they looked a little bit more threatening once again. But just that, yeah, I don't know how you can turn it on 1 week and look as dominant as they do and then look so lackluster the week after. He's got big problems to sort out there, I still think.
Well, it's the same ones, isn't it? You want them to step up and be the real deal consistently each week. Speaking of which, though,
we said that, didn't we, me and Swartzy last week about Pogba? We'll judge him after 10 games. Everybody's raving. He's had four assists in one game. Yeah, what would he do? He's had one game. That's the first time I've seen him perform like that since he's been at Man United in one game. So give him 10 more matches. See how they go.
Yeah, and when it's not as open,
he was instrumental though. He was instrumental in the equaliser, wasn't he? I mean, it was brilliant play from him, and then a great touch under Greenwood, and it was a decent finish. I thought McCarthy probably should have done better, but he was still instrumental in that moment. But that's the thing about Paul Pogba. Bridge is right. You know, we talked about before. Do they get enough out of him? Then they've got another player like Martial, who, if anything, they even get less out of. And I mean, he's a big unknown quantity. I don't know, and I don't think many people know how to deal with him, how you get the best out of him. I think, and I definitely know that Jose Mourinho found him really difficult to work out how to get the best out of him. He just seems so often like he's either not interested, doesn't care, or yeah, I don't know.
But he's 25 now,
and I think so many people pull that. What's that?
He's 25 now. He's not the kid that just broke through.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, that's what he's been given leeway for in the past, I think, being young, trying to find his way into the side, trying to find his way into being in England. And that's over with now. And for me, and I know there were a lot of pundits over here in the UK that were very, very outspoken about Martial and about if Manchester United want to win the league, they need a better player than a Martial. Martial's not going to win the league for them or he's not going to be a big player for them in their squad to win the league.
I'll tell you what, speaking of squads, though, Manchester City going to put five Thomas past poor old Norwich, who, you know, hapless in this occasion. No Foden, no De Bruyne, no, I say in inverted commas, no Kane. But Gabriel Jesus out wide. So what's that saying? Is Pep preparing for life with Kane, or is he trying to find a way to get Jesus in the squad? Does he not have enough wingers already? You know, what's he working towards?
Yeah, no, I think you can read several things into it. You know, I think it's been a thing for a while now. I think Jesus, you know, a little bit like Martial, how do you get the best out of him? And I think, you know, by putting him wide, you know, he can make runs inside. And I think it worked pretty well against Norwich. Not that it's a big sort of... I think their back line got absolutely destroyed. They got moved a little bit like Arsenal all over the place and runs in behind. So it's not really the game where you could see if it worked. But it's exciting. You know, they've got plenty of options when you can destroy a team without those players that you said. You know, I'm still hoping that they get Kane, even though Bridgie is probably rooting against it, because I think it would just make it so spicy between because then you would say they're evenly matched. They got, you know, again, the two number nines with Chelsea. And, you know, I think that will set the league up. But we'll see. Definitely Guardiola works his magic with whatever players he has.
Yeah, I hope you're completely wrong and I hope they don't get Kane. But if they do, it's game on. But what I thought was magnificent, I loved the way that Jesus played out wide and he played high and wide. And Grealish played high and wide on the left-hand side, Torres down the middle. And that allowed Bernardo Silva and Gundogan just to go and join in them little pockets. And you credit the, you know, I credit to the degree Farker, who wanted to play the 4-3-3 and try and go toe-to-toe with them and not play counter-attack. It didn't work. And the boy Gibson, the centre-half on the left-hand side alongside Hanley, there was three moments in the game where he's got Torres up against him and he's got Silva coming inside. And what they did, they both dropped in and he followed them in. And the little slip pass from Walker, there was two passes in behind for Jesus because there was a massive pocket of space left by Gibson. He didn't know whether to have, I hate saying this, a shit, a shower or a shave. He didn't know what day of the week it was because he was just lost. There was none of that. Tommy just talked about it before with Arsenal and Liverpool. Who's going to be that defensive midfielder that screens? Well, Gilmore was there, but he was just left all alone. There was nobody else helping the two centre-halves out to pick up Silva and Gundogan when they came forward. And I really felt for the back line of Norwich because they were just left. It was lambs to the slaughter. And I thought Man City looked dynamic yet again, but Norwich played into their hands.
Yeah, there's one team you don't want to be left exposed to, and that's Manchester City. Yeah. And to be fair, Norwich will have a few of those this season. Obviously, Liverpool, Chelsea. It'll be more, you know, more of the same. Manchester United, and that's the kind of big thing. And it's a bit, Leeds United are on a different level to Norwich by a million miles, of course. But it's the same kind of idea of we're going to play our game every week. Doesn't matter who we're playing against. Sometimes you just got to go, you know what? Got to change it a little bit. Got to be a little bit more secure. Give our back line a bit more cover to give ourselves any chance at all. But the way Norwich are playing and the way they do play, that's not going to change. And against the big boys, what is it going to take? 1 in 20, they may get a result. The rest of the time, they're going to lose.
Yeah, and you sense that ability to sort of adapt and compete. Maybe not against the big boys, but the tier below will be the key to survival, learning the lessons from last time this year.
Well, that's the issue about, for a lot of Norwich fans, I think there's this, you know, there's it's obviously a roller coaster ride. So it's the joy and the excitement of championship and doing so well and getting promoted again. And obviously coming to the Premier League going, right, okay, we're going to have another season where, okay, we're going to have some decent results. We're going to play some decent amount of football, but we're going to go straight back down again. And I think it's almost a given and almost an acceptance from Norwich fans that that's how they're going to be. And it's a model, I suppose. It's a model that has worked for them. You know, they've been able to produce players, sell players, invest in the academy, continue to invest players. The question is, how long can you keep doing it? How long can you keep reproducing those players? How often can you keep finding those gems to end up doing exactly what they're doing? You know, 1 year down, 1 year up. I mean, Swartzy, financially it works.
That's what happened with Sunderland. Sunderland were known as that club. Partly when I was there as well, I ended up getting sold from there. Henderson got sold from there. Pickford got sold from there. It was, you know, up and down, up and down. They didn't see that long-term stability like Leicester have gone and done. And look what happened to Sunderland. It just went and totally capitulated for them.
Yeah, interesting shout. Interesting. Hey, just going back to Kane, who you mentioned, what did you make of him coming off the bench, Bridgie? The whole story was Harry Kane. But beneath that, there was also a decent little story about Dele Alli as well, who was coming into his own a little bit under Nuno.
Wolves, I thought, dominated the game. They had the possession there. They had the more shots or attempts on goal. But Spurs sat in. They played that kind of counter-attack that Nuno is renowned for. And when you've got Bergwijn and Son and Lucas Moura up top, doing them running and the counter-attack, it was absolutely superb. And there's no doubt about it that they want Adama Traore because it would fit the way Nuno wants to play. That is no doubt they're going to go all-out attack in the next 8 days to try and get him through. However, we're talking about Harry Kane. It was good to see him come on. I was delighted the fans give him a nice little ovation saying he's one of our own. How long that is for remains to be seen. And he had an opportunity to get a goal, but he didn't look as lively or as fit as we've seen him, and he didn't look mentally... I just don't know. He didn't give the fans the recognition or the ovation that he needed. There's definitely something going on where he just doesn't look quite right to me. And I observe him a lot because Swartzy told you. I love him. I watch his body language.
I observe his interviews.
I listen to all his comments. And he's gone very quiet in social media as well. So it's definitely affected him in a big way, this.
Yeah, he wants out. There's 100%. We all know that. He wants out. He's desperate to try to get Man City. And why wouldn't he? You know, and Spurs have shown, Nuno's shown, there is a Spurs without Harry Kane. Of course there is.
Yes, that's the worrying thing though, Swartzy, or a good thing, whichever way you want to look at it as a fan. He's shown that you can do it with Son up top.
Well, I think as a fan of Spurs, of course, some will be devastated, some will be disappointed, some will go, who cares, just get the money in and let's off we go again. He's done his bit, he's been loyal and he's been brilliant for Spurs. So, you know, there's a mix. But for me, he has to go. He has to try and make that move. He's 28 years old. If they don't sell him now, they're never going to get the money ever again that's on offer for him. And I think to bring someone in like Adama Traore, is he not, for me, he is probably he's probably for me the most exciting player to watch right now. Every time he gets the ball, he reminds me a little bit of Alphonso Davies when he gets the ball. When he opens up his legs. The only thing, obviously, Adama Traore is struggling with is that end product. But wow, I mean, energy pace is insane.
He doesn't look like a footballer.
No.
That's exactly what my wife said when she was watching the game. She went, he does not look like a footballer. Has he been drug tested?
Yeah, the arms are up, the shirt is up, the shorts are up. Like, bloody hell, he looks like an absolute superhuman out there. But I agree with you there, Sporty. I think it's just that final product. Again, he should have equalized. He had that, one-on-one. And a good striker, I'm sure you'll say, Brigitte. If he's got the keeper where he wants him, he just needs to go around him instead of he sort of panics a little bit and then he sort of lashes at it. I think that's where he just needs to take another step to get into that top bracket because he's got everything else.
Well, here's one for you. Wolves obviously getting beat, two losses. If Adama Traore goes and there's talk Navas is on his way, I'm not sure whether Man United are still sneaking around him. They could be in a world of hurt this season, Wolves.
By the way, they've had more second most chances or second most shots, I think, in the league so far. So the intent there, whether the quality is, that's got to be the concern. And they're adapting to a new manager too. So
yeah.
I think we might be talking about them a little bit more in another conversation as the weeks go on that we haven't over the last two, three years.
I also like Sace, right? The goalkeeper Sace. Is that correct? Yeah, he's... I thought he was brilliant against Spurs. I mean, I know he gave the penalty away. I know he was a bit late. It was definitely a penalty. I thought Dele Alli did brilliantly well to win the penalty, but the goalkeeper got himself in a bad position. But I thought he made some really good saves, and I think he's an upgrade on Rui Patricio, I have to say.
Yeah, right.
I agree. I was about to say it before as well, and also to recover. That was more or less one of his first actions. You're playing your first game at home in front of your new crowd, and you make a mistake, and then to recover the way he did, like he kept them in a game. He had 6-7 outstanding saves. He looks very good.
Is anything else that took your eye over the weekend? We're getting used to Gold Rush again, where you get four or five games simultaneous on a Saturday night. It's all happening at the same time. But there's a lot going on in the Premier League right now. Brighton. Up in third, all sorts of things going on. What's taking your fancy otherwise? Good, bad, or ugly?
I've got to say, the ugly that I saw had to be in the Leeds game. It was the penalty of Everton. And if you manage to just see the penalty before the ball is struck, you'll just see it's absolutely horrible. Calvin Lewin steps up to take the penalty, and there's a Leeds fan trying to put him off behind the goal with his big fat belly hanging out, and he's rubbing his belly.
I thought it was you.
Well,
Sporty, I
was waiting for that. I've seen a lot of things where people are trying to wave and put people off behind the goal, but to get your belly out and just give it a good rub, I thought that was hilarious.
That's good, wasn't it? Also, and on a serious note, how good for the Leeds fans to see Rafinha score in front of them? Brilliant, brilliant. That's the good, bad, and ugly of having the fans back. That is for sure.
I was going to say there was a moment. That was the other good thing I was going to say about that game. I was delighted that he got that because the fans hadn't seen him. He hadn't played in front of a full house at Elland Road, and I thought that was just a marvelous moment and a top class finish from a top class player who I know there was a lot of clubs chasing him. There's still 8 days to go. Hurry up and shut the window so Leeds can keep a hold of him.
All right, you other gents, Schwartzy.
I mean, back to the fact that we talked about him briefly before, obviously before, and Harry Kane, the Spurs fans, the reception they gave him, he's one of our own, considering everything that's gone on, that he didn't turn up for training and so forth, that they're still behind him. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Tommy?
Yeah, and I got a look at my old club. I'm excited about Danny Ings. What a goal he scored this weekend. And it could prove a fantastic signing. I'm hoping you know, that him and Ollie Watkins can link up, because I think, you know, they both, you know, got individual strengths. Obviously, you know, Ings is an absolute goal scorer, and Watkins got the pace in behind. And we saw the qualities now. He's produced in both games, and what a finish.
I cannot believe we are sat here, Dave Wiener, with two goalkeeping legends and the Goalkeepers Union, and not one of them said and mentioned Leno's save from Lukaku's header.
I mentioned it earlier, and we've just talked about size. You know,
we are talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. This was your moment to shine, goalkeepers.
We talked about De Gea actually, you know, saving Man United.
They gave a masterclass on marking Lukaku.
See how easy it is to ruffle the feathers of these two? It's so easy, Dave. Look at them.
You know, I'm sitting here praising one of your own.
I know.
And then you're coming back at me. Like, that's, you should, what cracks be applauding. You should be a standing ovation for this.
Well, love your work, Tommy.
Talking about ruffled feathers, what about Solskjaer and Klopp? Manchester United-Liverpool divide doesn't unite particularly often, but here they're both picked apart the interpretations of the rules this season that's changed slightly, where the referees after the Euros, which was a free-flowing tournament, minimal intervention by referees, they were encouraged to let things go a little bit more in the Premier League this year. But what Klopp and Solskjaer are saying is that the game's become rugby, or the game's become wrestling. There are things that need to be pulled back. Ironically, a rule that's probably been put in to add an attacking flow to the game, they are arguing has possibly let players get away with more so far. Because you're nodding the most, Tom, we'll start with you. What are they up to here, these two managers? And do you agree with their interpretation? Obviously, with it keeping in mind that they have elite stars that they're trying to protect.
Yeah, I think the politics are being played here. They definitely got an agenda, and you can understand it. Like, we were talking about, you know, Liverpool, you know, their squad, and we saw what Van Dijk being out meant, and you know, the challenges to him and Matip got from a physical Burnley side. That was obviously their plan, you know, and that's the way they play. So you would want protection, but I still think it's a physical game. I love the changes. I love the Euros, how it's flowing. And I think it's been a fantastic start to the Premier League. So you get where they're coming from, but I don't think they've got nowhere to go. You know, they're just trying to influence the referees a little bit, playing some mind games. And I hope the referees stick to it. And I think Dermot Gallagher was out. I saw some quotes from him that, you know, that they should just get on with the job. The referees are doing brilliantly, and I agree with them.
Yeah, I agree that you should allow the game to flow a bit more, or like they did in the Euros. The only, I suppose, maybe from a Klopp and a Solskjaer perspective, if you let it flow, you don't stop it, you don't penalise someone, there becomes a bit more of a persistent fouling. So they've got to find that balance of not allowing things to flow too much and players to get away with continuously fouling people. Whereas if you stop it, give a warning, there's a chance that players will have to pull in after running in because they get a yellow card, and obviously they're on the last chance. So they're still finding that balance, but letting the game flow more is certainly important.
I think Solskjaer, to be fair, having that whinge, the tackle on Fernandes, that was looked at from VAR. They allowed the play to go on, and obviously Adams got the goal from it. So I think that was a bit of a whinge up. But if there's anything to say that the laws are improving the game, we are seeing more opportunities. We're seeing the game flow more. You don't want to hear the referees whistle all the time. And there's a lot of players do go to ground very, very easily, knowing if there's minimal contact, they'll get a free kick. That's been taken out the game, which I'm delighted about. And I think if anything can sum up how they got it so right, was that this morning's match, or obviously in the UK, the evening, was Leicester's sending off of Perez. When Oliver allowed the play to flow on, and when the ball went out of play, they realised it was a dangerous leg-breaking tackle. The laws of the game have gone, they've had a look, and they got it right. So there is ways around it. However, like you say, what Swartzy says, the persistent fouling is one that you're going to have to be aware of, because you know you'll always get one or two or three challenges in a game, and if you keep doing it, the cards come out. So that's the one that we need to look at.
I think the Perez one is possibly not a great example, because when you see it, I mean, the only reason I think he's let it go is because he's not 100% sure.
But he didn't even give a free kick, Swartzy.
Exactly.
And he was five yards away.
So he's obviously not seen it. So if he sees it, like he's obviously seen it on the replay, for me, he stops the game straight away and gives a red card. Even though there's no intent, but it's a red card. There's a leg breaker, like you said earlier on in the show. So in that instance, it's the other extreme. It's only because he doesn't see it.
So that's actually the VAR is working in full flow there, Bridgie, as 100%. Opposed to the, you know, he let it go because of this new interpretation and then VAR came in.
Terrible. What was the thing you used there, Swartzy? You said what? Not the right interpretation, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. In this instance, it was probably not the right example.
Thank you. You're right. The only time I agree with you. But it was a good argument I put up.
It was a studs up example. It was just a bit off the mark. But
never upset the goalkeepers union, man. Look what happens.
Too much praise for referees. Very good. Moving along to a couple of quirky things to end off with. Did you guys see what happened in France during the week with Nice and Marseille, where Dimitri Payet was hit by a bottle? The game was 1-0 to Nice at that point. He was hit by a bottle. He threw it back into the crowd before the fans stormed the pitch, causing the match to be abandoned. Some absolutely passionate fans involved there. Throwing it to you guys for what you made of those scenes, because they were unruly, but also a throwback to your day and things you might have experienced that brought back some memories of. I'll start with you, Thomas, and work through.
And obviously, these are the scenes you don't want to see in football. You know, we know as players, but you know, you can't react. Doesn't matter what comes from the fans. And it's something that's, you know, it's something that happens down there. There was trouble with Marseille against Strasbourg, I think, not long ago, and it's local derbies, a lot of passion, and as players, we got to protect that, and you can't say anything or make gestures, and definitely not throw bottles. It doesn't excuse the fans jumping and trying to, you know, get to the players. But yeah, like from an own experience, we had a game against Sweden a fair few years back, an important qualifier that was right in the balance at the end. And we had a red card. Christian Paulsen managed to hit a Swedish player last minute. The referee gave a penalty. And out of nowhere, a fan ran onto the pitch and tried to hit the referee. Last second, I think Daniel Agger managed to sort of step in. So he only grazed him. Otherwise, he would have absolutely floored the referee. It was a huge scandal. We lost the game 3-0. And there was chaos afterwards. And you know, whenever fans enter the pitch, it's never good.
What do you reckon, Schwartzy? What do you got?
Who would have known the Danes were that aggressive? Honestly, I never thought that.
I think Thomas. he had one too many Carlsbergs, I think.
Can't handle a drink.
Good for the sponsors there. Well done, Thomas. Good for the sponsors. yeah, I mean, interesting that, wasn't it? I mean, in terms of Nice, Marseille, Payet. I mean, listen, there's one thing, you know, you have an idiot who throws something onto the pitch. You know, I mean, that's one thing, right? But then for the player to pick it up and throw it back, I mean, it's just utter stupidity, right? And interestingly, from what I saw of the I think it was the president of Marseille then came on and gave a video interview about the reasons why Marseille didn't come back on again. Within discussions with the referee, the referee also agreed it was too unsafe to go back out and play the game. Apparently, it was the league that insisted that the game continued. And therefore, because the Marseille had spoken to the referee also agreed it wasn't safe, they decided they weren't coming back out again and went and left the ground. But, you know, you don't want to see that stuff, like Thomas was saying. I mean, it's horrendous. That sort of behaviour, sometimes, unfortunately, it happens. For me, I mean, I've never really had that issue, that situation where I've had fans run on the pitch. I mean, I've had fans run on the pitch. I mean, the best one was when Gazza was playing with us and a woman ran on the pitch completely topless and ended up finding herself right in front of Gazza. And of course, Gazza opened his arms up and gave her a big hug because that's what she wanted. And I think she gave him a big kiss on the cheek. So that was a more lighter version and happier version and funnier version.
I remember that one well, Swartzy. I remember it well.
Yeah, it was cold as well. Jesus, it was a freezing night as well up at on the riverside.
Well,
so,
you know,
she was game.
The colder it is, the less the wear in the northeast, mate.
Absolutely.
Bridgie?
I agree with the boys. You can't be seen to react and doing things like that. I remember there was two incidents that we had at Leeds United when we travelled to Turkey. Sadly, one of them was Galatasaray when we lost Kevin and Chris to the tragic stabbing over there. But during the game, we didn't want it to go ahead. There was, you know, the reception that we got there with the armoured trucks following us in with the water cannons, getting the police escort into the ground, the tunnel of police coming out. And Harry Kewell went to take a corner and he got absolutely pelted with coins. Absolutely pelted. And I just remember Harry like picking them up and he was thinking, he was, you know, gesturing that he was going to throw them back, but he thankfully he didn't. And he put them down. I think he put a couple of them down his sock, which I thought was quite humorous. But the next time we went there again, it must be a thing. Turkish fans must just have shitloads of money, because when I got injured against Beşiktaş, snapped my leg, and I remember getting stretchered off. And as I was looking up at the sky, I had Dave Hancock, the physio, like looking over, saying, "What have you done?" I said, "Don't know, mate. I'm in absolute agony." And I looked up and it just looked like stars, and the stars were getting closer and getting bigger. And then all of a sudden just started hitting me and Dave Hancock and the guys that were carrying the stretcher. I was getting pelted with silver coins, and Dave Hancock actually leant over me to protect us and got hit on the back of the head with a bottle, and he almost knocked himself out and he was on the stretcher as well. So two times in Turkey that I've had really, really bad memories of that with these, with the coins and the abuse that you get.
It must have been personal, Bridgie. Absolutely. I mean, understandably, probably, you know.
They probably thought I need a bit more money.
That would happen anywhere in the world, I think.
Yes, I think so as well. Especially if he goes to Tottenham or if he goes to Leeds, you know, because he just doesn't know. It can't make his mind up.
Just tormenting the bat enough without sending the gold coins down.
Exactly. I remember actually there was an instance where we didn't even play the game. We were on our way to the game. The second game against Uruguay back in 2001, the World Cup qualifier, arrived at the airport, got spat out, punches thrown as we were leaving the terminal. And then when we arrived, basically from that point onwards, we had a military escort arriving at the stadium. I mean, the police on mounted horses, massive big swords, shotguns. It was insane. During the game, at the end of the game, there were like people were breaking up bits of the stadium and throwing concrete boulders at us. And there's like a moat around the pitch, high fences. Man, it was a great throw. Seriously, unbelievable. The distance they threw it was pretty impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, that's one of the famous moments of Australian football, and we know lessons learned for the next time around too.
Absolutely.
So, and that's a whole episode in its own right. Gents, finishing off with a couple of quick ones. Ange Postecoglou against Steven Gerrard this weekend in Scotland. Rangers against Celtic, 6 in a row for Big Ange. Your impressions of that and I mean, what a stage this is, Bridgie. What a stage.
Yeah, it is absolutely set. You know, he had a little bit of a rocky start in the Champions League coming in. He hadn't had much time to get his, his philosophy and playing style over at the group of players that went out there straight away. The media were on Ange's back after the Champions League. And I think he's handled the media tremendous. And the way the players have come out and embraced his style of play and the goals and the chances that they are creating with the amount of numbers Celtic get forward. It's great to hear pundits and people now saying, you know, it's the most exciting football Celtic have seen in a long time. Now, we've witnessed Ange on several occasions, what he's done. He's a serial winner. And like I said to you, I tried to get Martin Baines to get him as the Sunderland manager before they got Chris Coleman in. And that was, you know, that was on the Netflix documentary, Sunderland Till I Die. And I was, you know, they were saying he's too much of a small name. Nobody would know him. Well, you've got to do your research. You've got to find out what he's all about. And I'm just delighted that he has gone to Celtic and shown what he's worth. And this is going to be a massive, massive game, because I think it's the first time that Celtic fans fancy this against Rangers.
Well, this is the one, isn't it, Schwartzy? This is the one that changes everything if he gets a good result here.
It does. And listen, he's done incredibly well. He really has, against all the odds. Really, the expectation was that he was going to fall flat on his face. The reservation I had was how long it took sometimes for Ange to get his philosophy across to his team. That hasn't been an issue, really. Like Bridgie said, the first couple of games, which is completely accepted or expected to a degree. The only thing is it was a Champions League game, the amount of money that's involved. And that's the only kind of, I suppose, small cross against his name. But everything else since then has been phenomenal. And they go into the game in better form, looking better than Rangers. But again, as we know, with the big derbies up there, anything's possible.
And the fans are back this year as well. It's going to be unbelievable.
Yep. So, you know, this is the one, isn't it? This is the one because people will judge him even more so on this game.
If he can get a result, it's Celtic are away. That's correct, yeah? It's at Rangers?
Yep.
If he can get a result away from home against Rangers, these are the only two results he needs to win this season for him to go down in folklore history at Celtic. There you go.
Yeah, and by the way, just spoke about Champions League was disappointing, but they're 2-0 up 2-0 up against AZ going to the second leg. It's away, but in the Europa League playoff too. So European football, in some way, shape, or form, can certainly recover that. You know, that was a huge curveball walking into the club and having a Champions League qualifier within the first couple of weeks. So that'll be another way to redeem it as well. Hey, Tommy, another Aussie thing to you, but one that we've got a bit of alignment here. What about Harry Suter suiting up for your old mob Stoke? Man of the match. He's worn the armband. He scored some goals. Stoke are going well. And there's a few eyes on Harry Suter as well as a potential player that might be, you know, might be one that Stoke can make some money out of in the next window or two.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping that he'll stay for the season. I think, he's definitely an up and coming. I love what he's, you know, the way he's burst onto the scene with the Socceroos. I watched him closely at the Olympics. You know, he's got the stature for the championship for sure.
For Stoke.
Come on, Bridget. We've moved on, Bridget. We're fast flowing, you know, playing out from the back sort of team. But I think he can still add things to the game. So I think, you know, if he can stay there, potentially make it into the Premier League if they can continue the good form. I still have my doubts, but he can then, you know, go to a bigger club because I think he's got a great future. He's got the size, he's got the attitude. He's that good old centre half. You know, he can put his body in the way and can still play with his feet. And then with the more games he can get, the better he will be and will be good for Socceroos. And I'm sure he'll either stay at Stoke and go to the Premier League or he'll move on. But I hope he'll stay for Stoke's sake and for his own sake. I hope he stays this season and keeps proving that he's the player he is.
Schwartzy, a lot of fans here are curious who our next player in the Premier League might be. Obviously, Caleb Watts is in the Southampton squad at the moment. I mean, there's a few kids on the fringes. But would you say Harry Suter probably is possibly the safest bet if you had to make a prediction for the next one in?
Probably, yeah. I mean, currently, I would think so. If he continues to turn heads, if he continues to put in performances like he has, if he does it for the next 4 or 5 months, January, I think he'll be gone. I think there'll be a couple of teams in the Prem that will certainly be keeping an eye on him already. And come January, there'll be a couple of teams, injuries, whatever it is, in a bit of trouble, whatever, and be looking at bringing a player that could potentially make a difference.
Let's hope. Let's watch this space. We'll see who's happy, the Stoke fans or the Australian fans, come January next year. Gents, thank you so much for your time today across the globe, across Australia, across the state. But it's been good fun as ever and hopefully a bit of entertainment for everyone at home getting through these days. And we'll get through these days and we'll keep watching football to do so. Thank you so much for your time. Good night to you, Schwartzy, and have a good day to you, gents, as well.
Thank you, gents.
I just hope sports gets through the next 5 weeks in Spain. You know, that's what I'm worried about.
Listen, it's going to be a struggle. And I'll be thinking about you guys. And I'll need your encouragement and your enthusiasm to help me through it. But I'll keep you up there as well.
Make sure you don't go for a swim in the Mediterranean Sea there and do a backstroke because the shark alarms will go off with your nose sticking out the water. Enjoy.
Mate, firstly, I'll just say to you, I've got no problems about not swimming in the Med because I'm nowhere near the Med. I'll swim in the Atlantic. I'll be fine, mate. No
Bridget has just done a mic drop. He's just walked off.
We went an hour. The best line just come right at the end. We're going to have to flip it around so everyone can hear that.
Oh, take care. Enjoy lockdown, everybody. Stay safe. Thanks again.
Enjoy, see you guys.
Good stuff. See you, man.
And see you, guys.
And everyone out there, as ever, until the next episode of the Gagger Pod, there is so much football, so enjoy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.